They want to talk about judging others. We always hear people say, judge not that you be judged. It bothers me to hear us say use this verse sometimes. But it's nice to have the verse to prove. Most people use the verse to make themselves feel better about themselves and what they believe and stuff. And that's how this verse has been used. It has been used to convey the idea that you live your life and I live mine. But don't tell me how to live, and certainly don't try to impose your standards of morality on me. When a person gets caught breaking the rules, they tend to use this verse when somebody tries to correct them. I don't think that's how Jesus intended for this to be used. We can look at verse Matthew 5:20. For I say unto you, except you righteousness shall exceed the righteous and the scribes and the Pharisees, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. We must have a different kind of righteousness from the scribes and Pharisees that wore their beliefs on their sleeve, and it was superficial. Our heart must grow out, and our heart must be committed to the Father. Jesus teaches us to deal with these two different extremes of the problem we have, and that's judgment. The first extreme is harsh and critical spirit. The second is permissive. This morning we'll want to talk about both extremes. In Matthew 7:1-2, judge not ye that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure shall ye mite, ye shall be measured to you again. Jesus looked at this religious situation of his day and saw that judging others had become a great religious problem. The Pharisees and the scribes sat in the place of the critic. They were quick to pass judgment on those who didn't live up to their expectations. And Luke, if you turn to Luke 7:36-7:37, and one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat. And behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat with the Pharisee's house, brought in a box of anointment and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the anointment. Now the Pharisees which had been them saw it, and spake with him, and saying, this man, if he was a prophet, would have known who and what manner of this is that touches him, for she is a sinner. See, the Pharisees and their self-righteous arrogance had created a special class of people called sinners, as if they themselves were not such. The Pharisees were used to judging other self-righteousness. Jesus said there are problems with that kind of judgment. It's overcritical and always going around with the nitpicking attitude, digging and searching for fault in others, and searching for the, and always looking for the worst. See, Jesus said that we are not to judge. Now, he's not talking about judging in the courtroom or obvious sins that you see. He's talking about teaching against false teachers and stuff like that. He's not talking about the hasty, unbothering, the people that think that, they just point out any little thing wrong with everybody else. And he's talking more about starting rumors and gossiping and things like that. Jesus saying he would never assess people with discrimination, but rather he would not have harsh judgment spirit. Jesus don't tell us to create, but to renounce the presumption of ambition to God. You might have heard the saying, don't judge a man until you have walked a mile in his shoes. For example, a person brought up in a Christian home can really not know the temptations of a teenager brought up in a sinful environment. The fact is that we realize that what some people have to go through, instead of condemning them, we might marvel that they have succeeded at being as good as they could have been in the environment they were raised in. So before we look at that person and say, well, look at how this person is, look at how that person is, we don't know what that person went through to get to where they're at. So it's not right for us to be able to judge that person. And that's the way that he didn't want us to judge. I once read a story of this reporter who was trying to find a story about how people in the South were lazy. And when he saw this man sitting in the field watering and hoeing up his weeds out in his garden, he thought this was the ultimate of laziness. So he ran to his car and he had a story, getting ready to write it down. But as he went back and looked, he saw that the man's pants were just swinging. Come to find out, the man didn't have any legs. And he thought this every Sunday. I was quick to judge that guy. Thought he was just real lazy. So he went back and actually looked and seen the guy had no legs. He was still out there attending to his garden. He was not going to let that hinder him from doing what he needed to do. See, he just realized that he just went and judged somebody off his first appearance, not even really taking into account what was wrong, why this guy was sitting in a chair or anything like that. But that goes to show the limits that we sometimes see in other people. Turn to 1 Samuel 16 and 7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not into the countenance or in the height of the stature, because I refuse him. For the Lord seeth not, a man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh unto the heart. That's why we don't have the right to sit and judge or on someone else's motives, because we don't know what they are. Only the Lord knows. In response to this sort of critical attitude that Paul's running in 1 Corinthians 4, 3 through 5. But with me is a very small thing that I should be judged on of you. For a man's judgment, ye, I judge not my own self. For I know knowing nothing by myself, yet I am not hereby justified. But he that judges me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes, who both will bring to the light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest of the counsel of the heart, and then shall every man have praise of God. There's no way to know everything in everybody's heart. We can't read others' motives. We can't see others as God does. We need to give others the benefit of the doubt. We receive the same kind of treatment that we dish out. If we judge other harshly and jump to worse conclusions about them, we can be certain that we'll be treated the same way when God comes to judge us. Matthew 7, 3 and 5. And why behold thou that mote that it is thy brother's eye, but considering it not the beam in thy own eye? Or wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thy own eye? Thy hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thy eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote of thy brother's eye. There's another problem with the Pharisees' righteousness. Not only is it not overcritical, but it's also hypocritical. It was a two-faced. We look at people with bifocals. We use the bottom part to see ourselves, which is kind of a rosy tint to it. We tend to look at the past, any shortcomings, but the top part of it used to look at others. And that's what the hypocrite Jesus was denouncing. See, the Pharisees looked through a top part of the bottle of focuses on, and oh my, I'm glad I'm not, well, let me read Luke 18 through 12 first. Two men went into the temple to pray, the one of the Pharisees and the other of the public. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as one mean men or extortionist, unjustly, or adulterer, or even a public. I fast twice a week and I give tithes of all that I possess. See, the Pharisees look through the top of the bifocal. Oh my, I'm glad I'm not like the scumbags out there. And then he looked through the bottom part of it and said to God, you are just so blessed to have me on your side. That's the kind of judgment Jesus condemned. We're not qualified to sit in judgment on others because it's impossible to be impartial. We're influenced by our own imperfections. We all do this. Well, I know I do this. When I watch football, I used to criticize the quarterback when he don't throw the pass right. Or I say that lineman didn't block for that quarterback. Or I just find something wrong with my team when they lose, and I can sit there and pick out everything that everybody can't do when I'm watching. And then they can sit up there and look at me and say, well, why ain't you out there? Well, I wasn't good enough to be out there. But I can sit there and I can tell them what they're doing wrong. But see, that's part of us judging. You know, we sit there and we judge that lineman, that quarterback, or that receiver for dropping that pass. But we ain't out there doing. We don't go through what they go through to be able to do that on every Sunday, Thursday, wherever they need to do. But we sit there and show enough judgment when they don't do it the way we want them to do it. But you see, even though we're not qualified, we still judge. And we often do so for, we do it for a selfish reason. And I did it for a selfish reason because I wanted my team to win. That's why I did it. It was a selfish reason for me to judge them. And sometimes we do that. And it makes us feel better when we can. So now we figured out the problem with our team. This takes the pressure off of pointing the fingers at somebody else. It makes our sins seem not so bad after all. And we point out the wrongdoings and the sins of others sometimes. We just point it out like, that's their problem, that's their problem. And all we're doing is trying to not think about what our problems are. And we tend to just judge others. He didn't instruct us to stay out of people's business either. Rather, he gave us the responsibility for helping our brother. First, remove the plank from your eye, and then you will see clearly remove the speck out of your brother's eye. Suppose a child comes to you with a splinter in their finger and crying. Please take this splinter out. As a Christian, what would you do? Would you just like, well, I'm not going to bother him. I'm just going to leave that splinter there. So, you know, it's not my business. I'm not going to mess with him. No, you go in there, you take it out. You take that splinter out of that child's finger. And you're spiritually, not self-righteous, but spiritually thinking about helping that child with a problem that they have. Not, that's not judging them or anything like that, helping them with a problem. Matthew 7:6. Give not which is holy unto these dogs. Never cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and render you. A harsh, critical spirit is obviously wrong, and some have tried to get so far away from it that they have gone to the opposite extreme, which is permission. The whole other position point to the first 5 verses of the chapter as proof for the text. We're not to judge. They stretch long and loud that we cannot judge. They interpret as a meaning we cannot judge in any case or any setting. And especially do not try to tell me I'm doing anything wrong. First, Jesus didn't say don't judge and don't condemn. Then he said, in the first 5 verses, he said don't judge and don't condemn. Then in the same breath, he said, make certain judgment concerning people and behavior. How can the two positions be reconciled? The two positions actually complement and limit each other perfectly. In the first statement, we already have seen Jesus condemn the critical, holier than thou, jumping on conclusions, sorts of judgment that Pharisees were known for. In the second statement, Jesus acknowledged need for making decisions concerning people and behavior and that is detrimental to our Christian lives. Verse 6 stands as a safeguard against the extreme interpretation of verse 1 and 5. It's not the case that Jesus condemned all judgment. In fact, he demands that we make some judgment. John 7:24. Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are going out into the world. First Corinthians 5:11. Now I have written unto you not to keep company. If any man that is called a brother be a fornicator, or covetous, or idolater, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, which such of one not know not to eat, that demands that we make a judgment of some sort. When you read this verse, I mean, we should make some kind of command, some kind of judgment of a sort. The command not to judge others does not mean that we cannot see the sinful or certain actions. Now, we're never to look down in self-righteous judgment on another sinner, for we've all fallen short of the glory of God. We can recognize sin as sin, and we should never try to justify it. We see the teaching of Jesus as we close. Let's notice his example. In John 8:3, and the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that should be stoned, but what says thou? This they say, tempting him that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up and said unto them, He that is without a sin among you, let him cast the first stone. See, the mob tried to use her to trap Jesus, try to get him to be in conflict. Then the Jews' law saw that she must die. Romans saw that she couldn't be killed without their permission. This was never any doubt about the guilt, nor was there any doubt as to the seriousness of her action. So what did Jesus do when confronted with this? First, he refused to look down on her. He wouldn't allow the mob to treat her as a thing. Rather, he forced the mob to consider their own sin. Second, he didn't justify her behavior. He wouldn't refer to her actions as anything other than sin. He forgave her and challenged her to stop sinning. And if you read further on, you'll see when he challenged her to stop sinning. See how he was presenting with that? He knew what she was doing. He didn't justify the sin that she did, and he didn't condemn her to die, because that was not his place to do that. That was his father's place. And that's what he's telling us. We can tell you, we can point out the sin and try to get you to not sin, but it's not our place to judge you on that sin and try to belittle you about your sin, because we all have sin. We all fall short of the glory. That's why he said, who without sin, let him cast the first stone. And no one threw a stone, because we all know we're sinners. But Jesus will do the same for you this morning. If you need to pray in the church.